Hello and welcome back to Uneducated, the show where we feel dumb so you don't have to. I'm your host, Cammie Scott, and today I'm joined by Farmer Nick, a self-proclaimed plantrepreneur. His mission is to give people the knowledge and confidence they need to create their own green spaces in the pursuit of regenerative environmental action. Nick and I discuss his unique journey to finding his environmental and plant passions and how he sees what a more eco-friendly world may look like. Many of you may know I am horrible at keeping plants alive, and I definitely was not born with a green thumb, but according to Nick, no one is, and it's never too late for me to learn. So let's see if I can become a little less uneducated along with you guys. As always, don't forget to rate, subscribe, and enjoy the show. I love that we are in green. It's very on brand for this episode.
We coordinated this.
Yeah, it really looks like we did. So yeah, let's just jump into it. I love that I stumbled upon your socials by, I'm pretty sure my phone was listening to me talk to my girlfriend about wanting to introduce eggs into my diet and do it in an ethical way. It's something that I've kind of like talked about for years. And when people ask me why I don't eat eggs, I explain that if you don't know where the egg's coming from and I don't know how the chickens are treated, that's important. But when people are like, well, I have a chicken coop, would you eat my eggs? I'm like, I think I would, as long as you're not like abusing your chickens, why not? But yeah, I found your incredible post that I've seen everywhere now, that went very viral, and you articulated every thought I had and didn't know how to vocalize. So thank you for that.
You're welcome. You're welcome. It's something that I myself have struggled with articulating. And as someone who has kind of been on this plant-based journey for the last 3 years or so, you know, this made sense to me, right? It was a nonprofit community garden that teaches disabled adults how to garden with rescued chickens, no males in the system. Like, how many more check, right? But, you know, at the end of the day, you're not going to make everyone happy, but as long as you can live by those values and know as much as you can about where your food is coming from, then it's a win.
Totally. And I want to really deep dive a little later on in the episode into veganism and the perfect vegan, which is another quote I have written down from you that was just like chef's kiss, the best way of explaining it. But before we get into anything, we have to do a little trivia question. I like the listeners to feel comfy knowing that even we don't know everything, but you might know it. Are you a baseball kind of guy?
I played baseball in college.
Well, you might know this answer then. I definitely do not know this answer, but the question is, what state did the first official American baseball game take place?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. The first. So it's gotta be East Coast, right? Like
gotta be East Coast.
Yeah. We're checking some states off right off the bat.
Yeah, they definitely, I think they actually started during like the Civil War time. Oh man, it's gotta be somewhere probably.
I have zero baseball knowledge other than like some movies I watch. I'm from Pittsburgh. Like we have the Pirates. We don't, it's like, does that count?
I'm going to guess Virginia.
I'm going to go, I feel like Boston makes sense for me. So I'm going to go Massachusetts for sure. It's, that feels very, very baseball in
it
my head.
Very baseball.
Okay. You said Virginia.
Yeah.
The answer is, all right, we're both wrong. It's, I feel like it would have been up there in my guesses. It's New Jersey.
Oh
yeah.
Close. Yeah. You were closer than I was.
We were in the ballpark. No pun intended. Okay. So yeah, before talking about anything vegan and all of that, I want to hear more about your just plant journey, because before being plant-based with your diet, you found a passion with plants and you actually help teach people how to have plants in their apartment, add some greenery into their life. When did you get into that and how?
Yeah. So for me, you know, it started back in 2014. I had just graduated from Tufts University in Boston playing baseball, very much set up to be this, you know, corporate America, New York guy. And I had grown up in Westchester County, which is right above New York City. And everyone pretty much did the same thing. You go to your college, you come back, you live in New York, you move to the suburbs when you're ready to get married and have kids, and then you live out the rest of your days. And I did not want that.
No, thank but, you.
You know, I was living at home and I was, you know, saving up money. And my mom said, you know, listen, if you're going to live here rent free, mm-hmm. you got to do something around the house.
Fair.
I'm like, all right. Well, what do you want me to do? And she said, well, you know, you were an athlete, you're a personal trainer, you love to cook, you love food. Why don't you start a garden? And I had never, never even owned a houseplant before. And I said, okay, you know, I love being outside. Let's get my hands dirty. Let's go. And went to probably like Home Depot, picked up some tomato seedlings, some cucumbers, some zucchini, made a little raised bed in the backyard. And the moment that first tomato came in like late July, August, I was just hooked. I was like, this, why doesn't everybody do this?
Like I created life.
Exactly. Like I helped cultivate this life that not only, you know, I watched it grow in front of me, but now I'm literally carrying it up stairs and we're going to eat mm-hmm. it in our salad today. Mm-hmm. And each year the garden just grew more and more robust. And my whole family was like, oh, what should we get you for gifts? And I was like, seed packets, books, soil, compost. Like I want it all.
You went all in right away.
All in right away. And, you know, I'm growing heirloom varieties of squash and edible or non-edible ornamental corn mm-hmm. and sunflowers and all these different varieties. And it was just my happy space, right? Mm-hmm. Like this was where I could go to unwind and slow down. And slowing down in our world is increasingly difficult. And I found solace in that. Like I'm not mm-hmm. a meditator. I can't sit down and, you know, do the headspace thing, mm-hmm. but I can sit in my garden for hours. And it wasn't until I moved to New York City 3 years later that I was like, oh my God, like I'm in a concrete box. Mm-hmm. Like there are no plants around me. I am not mentally, physically, emotionally the same. I need to get back to homeostasis here. So I did what I thought made sense at the time and bought about 90 house plants and
filled the small New York apartment.
The space, right. And this was before the house plant craze really was taking off. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my ex-girlfriend at the time, she was like, hey, you know, why don't you start an Instagram? I was like, well, guys don't do that, especially not about plants. She goes, well, just try it. And I start doing it. And, you know, my baseball teammates are making fun of me. My, you know, colleagues at work are like, what are you doing? Like, why are you posting about your plants? And then all of a sudden people started DMing me and saying, hey, you know, let me ask you a question about this. Or can you come to my space and can mm-hmm. you come help me try and figure this out? And I was working still a full-time job in the startup world at the time. And, you know, all of a sudden ended up with over 50 clients in New York City. Oh, you know, wow. I'd be going to the flower district early in the morning, picking up pots and planters and plants and bringing them to work, working a full day and then installing them later. Mm-hmm. And it was really what I wanted to do. And, you know, with that and with the Instagram growing, I was able to quit my full-time job in August of 2019. And I've been full-time Farmer Nick ever since.
I love stories of people just finding their passion and then turning that into a business. I think it can be the scariest thing in the world to take that passion, especially when you already have a job and you are already on this path of stability and comfort, and then to shake up your life. It's so powerful though. And I think I'm not surprised that it worked out. I'm horrible. I have not a single real plant in my house.
I was going to say, I don't see anything.
Oh, it's very bad down here. We're in like the basement right now, but outside my window is greenery, but I live in LA. So to get my nature fix, I just open the back door and I'm in my backyard. I can't imagine living in New York. Yeah. Well, I just can't imagine that. Yeah. Well, now you have like all of your nature in your house and outside. It's perfect. But
I'll have to swing by and bring you some cuttings.
Please teach me your ways, because I recently moved into this house and we threw out all of our fake plants. And we're like, my girlfriend and I are both 30 now. So we were like, it's time. We need to learn how to take care of plants. Yes. We have dogs. We're doing fine with them. If we ever want kids, we need to be able to keep a plant alive. But I'm like notorious for killing plants. Plants that people give me and go, you can't kill it, I kill it.
Yeah. And that's the tricky thing. And I will say a couple of things. I say no one is born with a green thumb. And it can certainly be learned. And there's sort of like an intuition that mm-hmm. you build with it. And, you know, the one thing I'll say is that in 90% of cases, people don't kill the plants, the wrong environments Kill the Plan. And really what it's about is, and this is in my opinion, you know, it's about viewing the home as an ecosystem and really assessing every aspect of your home, not just from, you know, what kind of light exposure you have or, you know, where the heat's coming from, how humid it is, but also like, you know, what is the, where's the furniture oriented? You know, what kind of climate are you in where you might need to move the plants depending on the season? Do you have a forgetful partner who's going to overwater your plants all the time? Do you have a dog who's going to maybe nibble on those leaves? Like if you home as this entire ecosystem, you will be prepared to go into that plant shop with confidence and then say, I know exactly what's going to thrive in my space. And that's the part that I think so many plant parents don't take part in before they go shopping. And then they bring home that plant. And then 2 weeks later, they're like, oh my God, I killed it. It's like, hey, you didn't kill it. Your space killed it. Right? Like, let's give yourself some, you know, give yourself some grace here and give yourself a break, because it is a lot more challenging than people think. But once you get into that rhythm, it's smooth sailing.
How did you figure out all of those factors and what works and what doesn't, going from having a garden outside and only working with those elements to inside in a small apartment? A lot of New York apartments are dark. Was it just trial and error for you?
It was so much trial and error. And honestly, the outdoor plants can be in many ways more resilient, but they require more attention just because you're needing to water more frequently. There's chipmunks and rabbits, and the wars I've waged against the chipmunks in my parents' yard. I've lost every war. I've lost every single one of them, but I hope they enjoyed those tomatoes, because I wish I did. But the point is when you bring it home, our tendency is to overlove our plants. And I talk about this concept of mindful neglect being something that's really important, not just for plant care, but I think in a lot of things we do in life, because if we overdo it, be it, you know, plant parenting or real parenting or anything that involves caretaking, we're not letting that being or that organism do their own things to learn how to survive, right? And for me, you know, looking at my plants, I'm saying, okay, what can I do to make this optimal, not just for their lives, but also mine? And if you're a helicopter plant parent and you're just constantly checking and watering and this and that, like your plant's not gonna be able to do its thing. So I do kind of daily check-ins with my plant, but just because I do those check-ins doesn't mean I'm actually doing anything. I just might assess and see how they're doing, give them a few positive words of encouragement, and then we're moving on. But in the beginning, it was so much trial and error. And one thing I always recommend for plant parents is, instead of buying the giant $500 fiddle leaf fig that's 8 feet tall, buy two of them that are a foot tall for $40 each. Put one in one room, put one in the other, water them differently, learn through experimentation, and be scientific about it. And that's the best way to get your hands dirty and also learn in the process.
I mean, that was incredible life advice that you can apply to anything. That was so insightful. So there's a lot of benefits to having plants and having them in your space. Can you go over some of the benefits for individuals and then also how it can help our environment by having those plants in our space as well?
Yeah. I mean, as individuals, you know, people talk about, oh, you know, they give off oxygen and, you know, they do, but it's not enough that it's really going to make a huge impact. So that's not the main thing for me. I mean, for me, and in some of these studies as well, you know, creativity, productivity, stress reduction. I was reading a study talking about Japanese forest bathing, and the Japanese government has invested millions of dollars in this science of forest bathing, where people will go on hikes and then come back. And not only is their mood better, but their ability to fend off certain diseases and immunity and cancer even have all increased, which is wild to me. Just
that
by going for a hike, and the benefits last, you know, some of them can last months. So for me, I'm thinking, okay, you know, I don't necessarily want to have to, you know, go on a hike every single day to get those benefits. I want to bring that here. And having the plants in my space, especially when I'm creating content or writing, it unlocks so much creativity. And just the sight of a plant, even in an office space, it can be a small plant on your desk, can just give you that moment to just pause and relax a little bit. And, you know, honestly, from an environmental standpoint, it's just a constant reminder that we are connected to nature. And in LA, we feel it more than in other places. But if you're in Chicago or New York City or Boston, it can be really challenging to feel that connection and that relationship.
Yeah. Especially like, oh gosh, winters in Pittsburgh. I felt like I would never see anything again, but slush and snow and the seasonal depression kicks in. So I'm sure having plants could probably help with that seasonal depression as well. Seeing something that you typically associate with like the warmer spring and summer months.
Absolutely.
I'm such a firm believer in how connected we all are. I'm not a very religious person, but I also think I almost think it'd be egotistical to think that there's not something bigger than us. And yeah. I've always thought that, like, I think my type of religion in my head is that we are all one thing. I always compare it to like on your body, your hair follicles may not know anything about your toenail, not even knowing that they're on the same body and they're working to just survive on their own. Well, I guess your hair is technically dead. So maybe a poor example there, but they're all doing their own thing to survive on their own, but they're all working together to keep you alive. And I very much so feel that way about everything on this planet. And I think we get so disconnected with that. We forget we're selfish beings, and we forget how much it's important that if I take care of this person or this plant or this thing, I am in a sense taking care of myself as well. I think plants are such a great way to do that. I wish I was better at it.
Hey, we're going to do a whole plant run through. We're going to go plant shopping at some point. So don't worry about that.
Perfect.
But what you just said resonates so much because, you know, I got into this from the perspective of agriculture and growing food. And, you know, as much as I love houseplants are not the end goal. Mm-hmm. The end goal is figuring out how we can save this planet.
Yeah.
And for me, houseplants are such a stepping stone towards environmentalism because if I can get you to care about this small little plant on your desk, I'm convinced I can get you to care about the big plant we all live on. And I've seen it with my own clients where, you know, they'll have no plants in their home. And all of a sudden we bring plants in. And then a year later, they'll say, hey, I started growing my own food. Or, hey, I'm now shopping at the farmer's market, or I'm plastic free, or this or that. Mm-hmm. And there are so many of those next level steps and evolution of people as environmentalists that I think we overlook the role of plants in their lives and inspiring that.
Yeah. If you're never seeing it, even on a small scale, how do we expect anyone to care on a big scale when they're just living their lives with their man-made things all around them? How are you supposed to care about nature in any way?
Exactly. And I joke around and I'll have to change my locations here because the joke doesn't apply to LA now, but if we wanted to solve climate change tomorrow, let's just dump all the trash that we send to other countries in Malibu. People would care a lot more if those were both plastic and trash. But you got to see it to feel it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So with that mindset and that you already had that, is that how you started getting into adopting a plant-based diet as well?
Yeah. You know, I've always been an animal lover, and really when I started caring more about the environmental movement and, you know, watching some of the more propaganda-y vegan documentaries on Netflix, like Cowspiracy, and I just watched Seaspiracy, which I thought was actually pretty decent.
Oh, did you? I didn't watch it yet because I heard that it was a little too propaganda and really blaming other countries more so than America.
That was my biggest critique, is that it really focused on other countries, whereas they're forced to do this because of our demand.
Yeah, it's like, right?
And our fishing practices aren't much better. Mm-hmm. So I didn't like, but the sentiments I think hold true. And after watching some of these and filtering out the propaganda, I took a look in the mirror and said, eating meat just doesn't make sense with who I want to be.
Yeah.
Like, how can I care about this, you know, awesome chocolate lab sitting next to me, but not care about, you know, the cow or the pig or the chicken or whatever it might be. Yeah. And, you know, we talk about being disconnected from nature, being so disconnected from our food system is a big reason.
Oh my gosh. It's like, we don't even associate if we're eating meat with that animal or where it came from or anything.
Yeah. I mean, for some of the meats, we change the name. Mm-hmm. Oh, we're not eating a pig, we're eating pork. We're not eating a cow, we're eating beef.
I've never even thought of that. Why did we change that just so people would feel and
some of them
weird
are the
about
same,
it?
Right? But like, still, like it's really interesting, the psychology of it all. And you know, I pretty much went in stages where I said, okay, you know, now I'm gonna be plant-based 100% during the week. And then on the weekends, I'm more flexible. And then the next 6 months, it was any meal I cooked for myself was vegan. And then I kept upgrading from there until I reached a fully vegan diet. And, you know, I would still consider myself a vegan, even though I, you know, now use the term plant-based. Mm-hmm. I probably won't eat eggs for another 2 years because I won't find a situation like that. But, you know, it's as long as your values are in the right place. And for me, it was always about the environment and the animals. And if I could prove those two things for me, then I could figure it out from a health standpoint as well.
Yeah. In your viral post I was discussing earlier about the eggs, the first screen of it is values are greater than labels, which I love so much. And I see that as such a problem in the vegan community all the time. Like if I eat an egg, I'm not allowed to call myself vegan, which is just so insane that I'm not allowed to call it what I want. Because also just for practicality reasons, if I go to a restaurant, I'm not going to go to the waiter, oh, I'm vegan, but I did eat an egg last week. So maybe sometimes I'm not. And there was accidentally a piece of cheese that I didn't know was on my burger. Like, you don't have to fit into every part of that box that label comes with. And I feel that way about every type of label that we give ourselves as humans. And for some reason, vegans want to be all or nothing. And I feel like that is pushing people away from being vegan on so many different aspects. Like I'm afraid to post about something if I eat an egg, which then is making people who follow me who aren't plant-based at all scared or not even thinking to try it because they're like, oh, I have to give up all of these things. And you don't. Give up one thing, like you said, give it up on weekdays, give it up on weekends, give it up, do meatless Mondays, do whatever works for you because it's helping.
Exactly. And my roommates and I joke around now, they're like, how long do you need to eat fully vegan diet to get back in the club? Like, is it 3 months? Is it 6 months? Like, exactly. Who knows? But the point is that, you know, for me, I want to inspire as much positive change as I can, as I know that's your goal as well. And I don't care. I honestly don't care about the, you know, 10% or whatever percent of militant vegans who are saying these things and coming at me on social, because that's not who I'm focused on.
Exactly.
I'm focused on the person who's never, ever eaten a meal without an animal protein. And the amount of messages I got from people who say, oh my gosh, because of you, I tried my first vegan meal and you made it so approachable. And thank you for representing a more open view of it. And my challenge to the people who were a little bit more aggressive in the vegan community is saying, okay, if your goal is to change the minds of 10 people, my goal is also to change the minds of 10 people. But the way that you're saying it, one person changes their mind. The way that I'm saying it, six people decide to be a little bit better. Which one had a greater impact?
Exactly.
And I think sometimes, you know, the labels are a source of identity and pride. And sometimes that gets in the way of actually trying to solve the problem.
Yeah, 100%. And I think everyone on every side of that scenario has the same goal. We're all working to the same thing and everyone's going to have their different ways to do it. I think that in every cause, there is need for the extremists. There is a role to play, but the majority cannot be that way, or it gets labeled as a crazy movement. And I think it was for a long time, being vegan was like this insane thing until it was more accessible to the masses. Even Impossible Meat is not made for vegans at all. They don't want vegans.
I don't eat it.
A lot of vegans don't. I mean, I have it when I want absolute junk food and I'm not being healthy at all, but it's for people who say I could never go vegan because I love my burgers. And then scientists made it to be like, well, if you absolutely must have your burger, here it is, but you didn't have to harm an animal.
Exactly.
So what are your thoughts on, I feel like a lot of times vegan options can be worse for the environment, the way that they're made, the amount of water that's used. How do you navigate that? Because I think that makes a lot of people not want to go vegan because it's like, oh, I did this and I thought it was right. And now maybe it's worse.
You know, there are so many ways of looking at this coin, right? And I think that the two lenses I look through are just not just environmental, but also the ethical way that we produce these things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, looking at a company like Driscoll's, which is the berry company, which had major issues with how they were treating their workers and undocumented immigrants and mm-hmm. the health and safety of those people. Like, a lot of vegans don't bat an eye at that. And they go and they buy those products. Mm-hmm. Love my raspberries and blueberries, right? And they don't care about those things. So I think that's an important part of this eco-ethical concept. But mm-hmm. when it comes to some of the environmental specific issues, right? I mean, a lot of the plant-based meats can be very intensive in, you know, how they're processed and the water that's used. And, you know, for the most part, I think it's hard to deny that a fully plant-based diet has less of an impact environmentally speaking, because, you know, when you think about how much food we grow just for animals, it's really startling. Like mm-hmm. I think the stat is, I think 25% of the world's land mass is used for livestock grazing. Mm-hmm. And that's a quarter that could yeah. be used to grow food.
Yeah. Then for all those people who are starving and don't have food.
Exactly. Then a third of the croplands that we have are used to grow food for those animals. So
it's such a messed up system.
And then people talk about, oh, you know, well, animals have B12 in them and, you know, you can't get that as vegan. I'm like, well, actually they're pumped full of B12 now mm-hmm. because originally they used to graze, you know, in a field, and the dirt from the plants would get ingested, and that's where the B12 is coming from. So much of our meat diet is promoting the wrong types of agriculture, not regenerative agriculture, which is a big term right now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you're growing corn for these animals, you're monocropping and you're not creating soil diversity. And if you're destroying the soil, that is the ultimate thing that we cannot replace in our world. And mm-hmm. it's really, really challenging. But on the other side, there are plenty of issues with, you know, the vegan foods that we eat, you know, agave, for example. People are talking about agave versus maple syrup, and people are talking about tofu, and all these packaged goods that are vegan are so great, but they're wrapped in plastic. It becomes really challenging.
Yeah. It almost feels like you can do no right. So, and I think that's where it comes with being your, I don't know if I already said it, but one of your other quotes was, the world needs 100 million imperfect vegans more than 100 perfect vegans. And I think that's where that comes in. If we can all just start taking steps in the right direction, it doesn't have to be an all or nothing today. And we're going to learn tomorrow that something we're doing right now that we feel is correct is incorrect. It's just about trying and adapting and looking towards the future. So with that being said, what is your opinion on what we do to improve the environment? Are you more towards like, we should be farming and creating our own foods individually? Where, how do we get around kind of everywhere we turn ruining our environment?
Yeah. You know, it's a great question. And I think it can be answered many, many ways. But for me, one thing that I am really passionate about is, how can we work with farmers that are currently not doing the things that are most environmentally conscious and help them transition to things that are better for us, right? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I think a big problem with a lot of these more liberal ideals, and being a liberal myself, right? You know, we say, down with factory farming, down with this, down with that, no more meat, no more this. Mm-hmm. But we need empathy, because mm-hmm. there are folks who are, you know, they spent generations doing this. And when they see that, how are they going to feel?
Yeah.
Are they going to vote for someone who they think is going to take away their livelihood? Right.
Yeah, absolutely not.
So a really cool example is this company that I'm connected with called App Harvest. And it's based in Kentucky, which is a interesting place for a giant greenhouse full of tomatoes that are grown hydroponically. And the founder there, Jonathan Webb, in meeting with him, he was talking to me about why Kentucky, like why mm-hmm. Kentucky for this very just different technological approach to agriculture. And he said, it's two reasons. Number one, that area of Kentucky is within a 24 hours drive of 68% of the US population.
Oh, wow. So
in terms of food miles, your food is not mm-hmm. traveling the average 1500 miles that it's going. And in California, we don't experience that as much, mm-hmm. but on the East Coast, you definitely do. And secondly, he said, I want to transition coal workers to ag workers in this system. Because as we move away from coal, these people are going to need jobs. They're an older workforce. It's not going to be necessarily the most tech savvy workforce if you're working in a coal mine. Mm-hmm. Now we are providing an opportunity for you to change. And I just think that approach is incredible because it's acknowledging the people in the equation.
Yeah.
Not ignoring them to just, you know, get clout on social media and shout from the rooftops what mm-hmm. we should be. Mm-hmm. And I think in more conservative areas, we need to respect these people and how they're making a living, because if you were in their shoes, you'd probably feel the same way. So I love those kind of new innovations and helping these farmers and these people transition to industries that are not only feeding people, but doing so in a way that is ethically and financially stable for them.
Yeah. And like you said, a lot of these people have been doing it for generations and generations when we didn't know there was anything wrong with this. So it's not about that these people who have these big factory farms are horrible individuals who want the environment to just die. It's the only livelihood they know. So if we can, instead of, like you said, shout from the rooftops and just say, no, don't do this, coming up with alternatives and transitioning, which is going to take time. And yeah. We've been doing things a certain way for so long. We need to find ways to keep jobs up and just transition everything into a better, more eco-friendly workforce.
Absolutely. How did you come to your plant-based journey?
Yeah, it was many years of, a lot of documentaries. My mom always tells me the story. I came home in, I don't know, maybe fifth grade. And I was like, I'm never eating meat again. That was horrible. I saw some documentary at school and I must've been younger because the rest of the story is going to make me sound really dumb if not. But my mom made chicken or fish or something for dinner. And I was eating it. And she was like, I thought you weren't having animal product anymore. And I was like, it's just chicken though. It's not like, it's not meat. It doesn't count. I knew nothing. So I had a few of those experiences growing up of like never eating it again. A couple of days would go by, have something, eat it again. Mm. And then I don't know. I got too educated on it. I knew too much of what it did to our environment and how animals were treated. And I read you actually said a quote that I always say, that if I don't have it in me to kill and prepare the animal myself, I don't have the right to have it. I don't think that we should never eat animals again. I think some people can, if they want to do that, if they're willing to, if they're going to use every piece of that animal and it's not going to go to waste. If it makes sense for you and we're not creating life to take it, I don't know. I might not have a problem with certain people doing that, but I could never. I know I couldn't kill an animal, so I don't deserve to eat that. That feels really wrong. I just had a lot of those thoughts. So I challenged myself to 30 days of going vegan. And in hindsight, I think it was so I would have a cop out if I couldn't do it and couldn't stick to it. Mm-hmm. And it was the easiest 30 days of my life. It was so simple. I had no struggles. I like stopped cold turkey and it was fine. I had no problems with it. I think living in LA made that a lot easier. I had just moved here, tons of options. I was definitely a junk food vegan for the first like year of it and realized that I wasn't feeling so great. And then, I just researched and learned and understood. It really helped me understand my own body and how to fuel it and how I'm connected to everything else. So it was a long time coming.
And it makes you a better chef too.
Yes. Yeah. And I'm a horrible cook. So
I refuse to believe it.
It's very true. I can follow instructions, but I'm not like excited to cook. That's for sure. But working on it and being vegan definitely helps because you're forced to get creative and understand flavors that you can make out of different things that aren't just animal products. So yeah, it definitely helps in the kitchen department, but I'm still not great. And I've been vegan for 5.5 years.
Well, we'll have to have you and your girlfriend over for a double date. And my girlfriend and I will cook for you. She's amazing. She's
Please.
Good.
We need y'all's help in the cooking department, the plants. I'm like, I understand. I know who I need to be. It's just getting there.
Is this just a job interview? Am I interviewing for your plant coach / vegan chef? Is that what this is?
I'm not even posting this podcast. This is just, I'm like, I just wanted to become friends with you so that you can teach me your ways.
I love it. I love it.
No, but I definitely need your consultant work with the plants. It's something I've always wanted to be better at. Really thought that I just would never be able to do it, which is sad because my mom's great. We never had really a lot of house plants growing up, but she was always gardening, always like making food from our backyard, which I thought was so cool. And just, I don't know, I never did it. And now that I have a little bit of a yard at this house, I'm going to step it up.
I love it. Well, one thing that I always love talking to, you know, beginner gardeners and growing your own food for the first time, is that there's no one right way to do it. But if you want to experiment with different mediums, whether it's soil or hydroponics, I don't know if you've seen the Lettuce Grow farm stand on my page at all, but like for anyone who's never grown food before, oh my God. Like,
is that easy?
It is the easiest thing. It's almost too
easy. I'm buying it right now.
I'll get you one. Don't worry. But it's amazing because, you know, not to harken back to the food system conversation, but when you try something off the vine for the first time, or, you know, break off a, you know, a sprig of lettuce and you try it, you're like, oh my God, this is what it's supposed to taste like.
Yeah.
And it's not just from a flavor standpoint, but it's freshness, because that food could be in transit for weeks before it gets to you. Right. That's why people complain that, you know, that you buy spinach and then in 3 days in your fridge, it's gone. But having something that you can truly taste for the first time was that kind of awakening moment for me. Mm-hmm. And I know it will inspire people to be like, oh, wow, like if this is what lettuce should taste like, I could eat this every day.
Yeah. I want that life for me. I'm still exploring the whole side of our house. The previous tenants were clearly great at gardening. We have like lemon, lime tree. I think I found strawberries the other day that got mangled but by some animal, but I'm so excited because we always used to have strawberries growing up. So we have it. We have like the base for it all. There's things that have been planted. They just need a little love. So I'm making you come over and teach me your ways, because
let's do it.
I think that also would inspire me to cook as well. Just having things come and I don't know, putting so much care and detail into making something grow gives you this sense of pride. And I like that when it comes to eating food. I hate that we just like order food or eat really fast. Something about that doesn't sit well with me either. So I like the idea of creating something and then making a dish out of it and really appreciating it a bit more.
Yeah. I mean, you get a strange feeling when you spend 4 months growing a tomato and then you eat it in 4 seconds and you're like, oh my God, that was so hard. That was so hard to do. But you do appreciate it at a whole new level. And my respect for farmers is through the roof, having volunteered and worked on a bunch of farms throughout the country, in Italy as well. Like it is wild how hard these people work. And I think if more people knew about it, they would appreciate their food even more.
Yeah. It's out of sight, out of mind. We're just so unaware. Did COVID make your business kind of flourish even more? Everyone being at home, having less access to food, not wanting to go to grocery stores. Did that help a lot?
Honestly, you know, certainly a silver lining in the pandemic world was this new fascination with plants and our food system. And for a while there, seed companies were sold out. Like you could not find raised beds at the Home Depot anymore. Like it was pretty wild to see how many people were getting into this for the first time. And, you know, I think people realized that, oh my gosh, if I'm going to be home and I can't get out the same way I used to, I need to bring the outdoors in, and I need to blur the line between the built environment and the external world. And you had a lot of first-time plant parents who were making a lot of mistakes, but really excited about it. So my business really took off, and, you know, I still do different, you know, installations, landscaping, edible gardens, that kind of thing, both in New York and here in LA. But man, like, it is so encouraging to see so many people into plants for the first time, because that's what it's going to take to make some of these changes happen.
Yeah, I think there was a big silver lining with the pandemic of people just being more aware and intentional in general with every aspect of their life. And I've watched that trickle into different areas. I've had way more DMs of people just being like, hey, I think I'm going to try going vegan. Do you have any, I'm a horrible cook. Do you have any really easy recipes, or where do I start? So do you have like your three steps of getting plants into your home or starting to make your own food in your garden? Where do you tell people who are like myself and have zero experience where to start?
I'll answer this a couple ways. Number one is find your role models. Like, I love in the vegan world, Max LaManna, Rainbow Plant Life, Chef Priyanka. These are people who are making accessible, easy recipes, zero waste recipes as well, that you cannot fail with these guys. It's so well done. On the plant side, my friend Joe Gardner is amazing. Epic Gardening, Kevin in San Diego is incredible. Fluent Garden, who I just discovered, she's amazing. So finding these role models who can give you that encouragement is the first step. And then after that, it's just, how can I try and grow as many things as possible? Because I never recommend to someone saying, oh, you know, just try growing tomatoes this year, or just try growing.
Okay. Like, so start big.
Throw as many things into the garden as possible, because you don't truly understand the plant until you've watched it grow, until you felt its roots, until you can smell the leaves. Like, until you've experienced that plant hands-on, you won't understand how to grow it from a book. So that's kind of what I just started growing as many things as possible. And you pick up different things and you learn things and you watch it grow. And there's so many valuable lessons to be learned in that experimentation. And then the next iteration of that is really just fine tuning it and saying, okay, I did this for one season. Now, what did I like to grow? What did I like to eat? You know, what are some herbs that I can have on my windowsill and grow indoors under grow lights? Grow lights, I think, are so underrated, because if you live in that tiny New York City apartment, you can still grow food.
Yeah.
Like, there's no reason you can't have a thriving basil plant or kale or other leafy greens. I tried to grow tomatoes in my New York apartment, which was a disaster because they got to be like 7-8 feet tall, but there's no pollinators. There's no bees or bugs or anything like that. So I tried to
probably don't want in the apartment.
Pollinate them with like a paintbrush. It was a disaster. I got like 3 tomatoes from it. But
good effort though.
I tried. I'm impressed. But the point is like, no matter where you are, you can grow something. And I think the more that you can grow, the more that you will appreciate your food differently. And even if it's just a sprinkle of, you know, herbs over your salad as a garnish, the sense of accomplishment and pride is just unparalleled.
Yeah. Even if I could stop buying mint at the grocery store that lasts me like a day and I get one piece out of it and throw it out for like my waters, I'd be happy.
well, actually there's a good tip there, because a lot of people, when they buy basil, right? If it comes with the stem, you can take off those bottom leaves, pop it in water, propagate it, and then plant it.
Okay. Right?
And if you do have, because some grocery stores, I know Whole Foods will sell like little planters full of basil. If you do have those things, don't just pick off the leaves. Cut in between. It's called the internode. If you cut in between on that stem, it'll become a bush. It'll start just getting bushier and bushier and bushier. So don't pick off those leaves. Prune it correctly and you'll have basil forever.
I'm learning so much. I like a year ago bought one of those basil plants because it was way cheaper than the plastic container with the couple pieces that were already brown. So I was like, okay, this is better for the environment. I'm saving money. And it died very, very quickly. So I was like, dang it.
A lot of light helps with the basil.
Okay. It was definitely in the shade. So that's where I'm going to start. I'm going to do basil inside, and then I'm just going to start throwing seeds everywhere outside to make it work.
LA, you can do it. Just throw them everywhere. Something's going to grow in this climate. So
okay, it'll be perfect. Fun. My goal is to eventually get good enough where I can have avocados, because I'm sick of spending money on avocados, but I don't know how I would ever do that.
$2 for an avocado. Like,
yeah, I'm like, grow. Yeah, I am, because of avocados. It's crazy. And I want to just give them to all the neighbors. That's my goal. Avocados someday. But yeah. I don't know. That one sounds a little bit too advanced for me.
Hey, you plant a tree and you just wait and you never know what's going to happen.
I'm going to try. Well, this was amazing. Thank you so much. I learned so much, but I'm going to have you come over, assess the environment we got going on inside, outside. Please help me be a better plant mom and gardener. I really need help. And then yes, I would love for your girlfriend to also help me with my cooking skills. I'm really just becoming a better person now and more well-rounded. Thank you, Nick.
Cammie, you know, we're just going to have a full plant-based day.
I would love that. Can you please let everyone know where they can follow along and where they can get more advice from you? Because I'm sure a lot of people are much more advanced than I am, but we all need help.
Sure thing. So I'm on Instagram at Farmer Nick, and website is just Farmer Nick NYC. Going to be talking about all things houseplants, agriculture, sustainability, and food.
Check them out. Even your Instagram, I feel like feels good because there's plants in every image, and inside your house, I feel like I'm outside while I'm scrolling on my little screen. I need to get out more.
Just pull up the Instagram.
Exactly. Well, thank you, Farmer Nick. I love that. I love that that's your handle. It is the cutest thing ever. And that you are also an apartment farmer. I just think that that's the new wave of the world. And I'm glad that we're going that way. Thanks for being so inspiring and wonderful. And I will see you all next week. Bye. Awesome.
Thanks for having me, Cammie.